Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
You bitch! No idea how bad it gets.
Sally, I think I'll buy the flowers myself.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Come to the cabaret.
But you're not a girl, you're a guy. And why would a guy want to marry a guy?
Do you know how happy I am that we slept together?
Oh, I feel that damn sick and dirty. I can't stand it.
Girls, let's go shopping.
We cooked food for him. He used us as bait.
Gonna stomp your little lassies and prada shoes at me.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are exploring the diverse landscape of queer modern Asian cinema. We want to know what kind of queer films are being produced in modern Asian countries and how those films are being policed and censored in their home states. So, Gina, Alan, some really big questions, but we are bringing in a panel of diverse guests to help us unpack these questions. So our first guest is Raymond Feng, the director of the Shanghai Pride Film Festival, which ran last month. So we are speaking with Raymond about the state of modern queer Chinese cinema and the restrictions that impede access to queer films in China. Next, we're speaking with Chris Luskry and Jake Shannon about their short film Sammy the Salmon, which recently screened at that very festival. And finally, we are speaking with Benson Wu, the director of the Taiwan Film Festival, about the state of modern queer Taiwanese cinema. So the Taiwan Film Festival runs from the 25th to the 28th of July in Sydney. And Alan, you may recall that we ran a program on Taiwanese cinema last year and had Benson on the program then. So it'll be great to catch up with Benson again and touch base about any developments in the queer cinema landscape in Taiwan.
In Taiwan, yeah. Daniel, just a little point of order, okay? I know how much you love points of order.
Okay,
and because you did mention that we're looking at Asian cinema. Now, Asian is a very big umbrella.
Very big.
It's a rather large place.
It is a very, very large place. So really, we're looking at East Asian film.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying.
Is that okay?
Modern,
is
queer.
Has the order now been established?
It's set.
Is that a tick?
Ground rule set.
Good.
I mean, I think we have two great examples here of Asian cinema. And obviously, queer Asian cinema is as diverse as the Asian landscape.
Of course.
And here we are, lucky enough to be able to set alongside the queer Asian cinema scene in Taiwan against that in Shanghai, or I guess I should say Taipei versus that in Shanghai.
In Shanghai, yeah.
So, and I think they're so different, so fundamentally different. And that's because we know that the way that the cities and the countries treat queer rights and LGBT rights is so different as well. So naturally, they give rise to different cinemas. And I just think it's so fascinating to be able to unpack these cinematic landscapes side by side.
Well, you just, and I think it was you, Alan, we literally, you look up LGBT Asian rights, and we just did a quick wiki search, and there's this gorgeous grid which kind of gives us little ticks and crosses as to what rights they have, similar to kind of comparing to the rights we have. Same-sex marriage, recognition of relationships, whether people, you know, even if sex discrimination laws are there, there's lots of red crosses.
Isn't
Let's
there?
Just say there's very few green ticks that are actually available. And look, some of you who might travel regularly, you'll be aware of this, especially as a queer couple travelling overseas. These are kind of things that we look at when we're travelling as couples. And there are places that I'm not going to travel to now as a rainbow family because I'm not going to feel safe in a particular region. But Taiwan is one of the, I think it was in May, was one of the first places to in Asia to legalise same-sex marriage.
So Taiwan is
the first. It's the first.
Taiwan is generally renowned as one of the most progressive countries in Asia when it comes to queer rights or LGBT rights, and that's why I think it's a great counterpoint to a country like China and a city like Shanghai when we look at the way that China produces queer cinema. So that's, you know, that's what we're going to be unpacking over the course of tonight's program. And we do have three really interesting guests who are going to be able to address this topic from their own different perspectives. So it's going to be a fascinating program. But before we get our culture on and before we go globe-trotting...
Our culture freak on. Is that what we're talking about?
It was just a culture thing, a turn of phrase. Okay, Alan,
Sorry, I was just, you know, just wondering what that was. That's all.
It was supposed to be a smooth segue, but
it was, and I just ruined it. I'm so sorry. But you know, that's normal.
I wanted to have a chat.
Why are you surprised?
I missed you, Alan.
That's every episode.
We have this segment that we love to do called the Outtakes Weekly Outtakes. But instead of running our new segment this week.
Oh.
Here we go, Alan.
Let go.
What do you want to say?
Nothing. No, I'm waiting for you.
Well, I thought we could have a chat about what a week it's been for felines in Hollywood because it really has been quite the week.
Felines? Wow. Are you talking like the scaredy cat from The Wizard of Oz?
No, I'm talking about felines.
Oh, okay. All right, yes. Oh, sorry.
Was that another joke?
No. I was just hard of hearing. Middle age now. Sorry.
It's the CGI feline.
Thank you. I was talking about Judi Dench, Jennifer Hudson, Taylor Swift,
Idris Elba.
I mean, what a cast. The trailer to Tom Hooper's Cats. Tom Hooper, we know he directed The King's Speech, he directed Les Miserables.
And he did The Danish Girl as well.
And finally, his long-anticipated trailer to Cats has finally landed. Jennifer Hudson there, part of the trailer to Tom Hooper's Cats.
And it sounds comfortable and it sounds like it's going to be a sellout and it sounds very safe, but within its release of that trailer, within the first hour, hundreds of thousands of tweets.
Oh, can I say 100,000 people viewed that trailer in the first hour?
Of course, because they were leading up. They were pretty good. Like the promotion leading up to that trailer launching was pretty spot on. But immediately there was a Cats hashtag, trending immediately. And what Universal has labelled as digital fur technology, people online were not so kind to this. Scott Mendelson, the film critic for Forbes, tweeted, well, he was a bit kind. Because he actually said, appropriately terrifying and insane, like a drug nightmare, I can't wait.
CNN...
drug nightmare, I can't wait.
You've seen the trailer.
CNN ran an article called Why the Cats Trailer Creeped Us Out. The New Daily ran an article called Cats Movie Trailer Panned as Taylor Swift Defends It. Mashable ran an article called, quote, the Cats Trailer is Scaring the Living Daylight Out of Everyone. So it certainly has incited a kind of backlash, hasn't it?
A backlash and a bit of a fight from CGI artists going, don't blame us. We do as we're told under tight restrictions and tight deadlines and tight budgets. So a lot of people have been hanging crap on the CGI
and
artists.
And deservedly so. It does look creepy. It doesn't look right. And you know what? There's a saying, it's a bit sexist, but they say, clothes maketh the man. And in that sense, you know, when you do put when you put your clothes on, you know, so often you hear actors say that when they put their costumes on, they're actually in character and it really makes a difference to their performance. And so,
look, it
you
looks
know,
like
here they are, they're running
Snapchat
her eyes CGI.
Filters,
it doesn't quite
the...
look right.
Cats isn't the only reason it's been a big week for felines in Hollywood because, of course, Disney dropped its Lion King remake. It dropped in the US on July 19th and already it has grossed $531 million globally. It is, after just one weekend, the seventh highest grossing film of the year after just weekend. So it's certainly going to make its way to the top
list. But it had a budget of $260 million.
Well, it's already doubled its budget in one weekend.
You know what? I'm just really disappointed that this is only going to encourage Hollywood and Disney to do the exactly same thing again.
And you know what was worse?
The critics have panned it. I mean, David Ehrlich of IndieWire panned the film, writing, quote, "Unfolding like the world's longest and least convincing deep fake, Jon Favreau's almost photorealistic remake of The Lion King is meant to represent the next step in Disney's circle of life. Instead, this soulless chimera of a film..." "Of a film comes off as a little more than a glorified tech demo from a greedy conglomerate, a well-rendered but creatively bankrupt self-portrait..."
They're not
of
bankrupt
a movie
anymore.
Studio beating its own
tail.
I do love that oxymoronic sentence there, greedy and bankrupt at the same time. I mean, it's wonderful. Great writing. But still, I mean, like, he's totally correct. I mean, it is a very bad film.
Well, I've been listening to the soundtrack ad nauseum, and we will be sampling it over the course of this evening. And we're going to kick off with what I think is one of the greatest tracks from this soundtrack. It is Spirit from Beyoncé, which also premiered on her new album, The Lion King, The Gift, which she released to coincide with this film. So we're going to take a listen to that now, and when we come back, we will be jumping straight in to the complex and diverse world of queer modern Asian cinema with our first guest, Raymond Feng, who is the director of the Shanghai Pride Film Festival. You are listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
You can find more Joycast and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are celebrating modern queer Asian cinema as we look at, in particular, the queer cinema landscape in Shanghai in China and also in Taipei in Taiwan. That was, of course, Spirit, Beyoncé's new track from Lion King, which has just opened and already grossed $531 million in just one weekend. So we're sampling that soundtrack over the course of this evening well.
Well, you know, I've just woken up. I've just given myself an intravenous shot of caffeine, some sort of stimulant to wake myself up after that.
That's called old age, Alan.
Old age. I don't know.
I'm with you, Alan.
I don't know. I mean,
That was a little bit.
Why is this on
another
repeat for you?
Lullaby for Beyoncé to rock her children's
Well, I love it. But we'll come back to that soundtrack later in the program. Right now, joining us on the phone all the way from Shanghai is Raymond Feng. Raymond is the director of the Shanghai Pride Film Festival, which ran last month. So excellently positioned to speak to us about the landscape of queer Asian cinema, and in particularly cinema in Shanghai. Raymond, thank you so much for joining us on Outtakes this evening.
Hey, hi everyone. It's great to be calling from Shanghai.
Hello.
Now, Raymond, the Shanghai Pride Film Festival, you've been running for 11 years, is that right? So this was in June, you just had the 11th iteration of this festival.
Exactly. We are celebrating, we celebrated our 11th year this year in June.
Well, congratulations. Now tell us, why is a festival like Shanghai Pride Film Festival so important?
First of all, I mean, to give everyone a little knowledge, Shanghai Pride Film Festival is under the bigger umbrella of Shanghai Pride. Mm-hmm. And we have a whole week of festival. And of course, film is one of the key elements of showcasing how the local community is being portrayed or recorded, lives and innovations and, you know, scene issues or progress of the local LGBT community. And of course, we incorporate with a lot of outside of China elements as well. Mm-hmm. To do cultural exchange and to keep people inspired.
I see in the program you've got this year you had about 60 queer films from more than 20 countries and regions.
Exactly.
Where were those films mostly coming from?
We reach out to the foreign consulates who are all in Shanghai. They will come up with some choices, some top choices. As well, we reach out to some key LGBTQ film festivals around the world, because we are also trying to promote Chinese LGBT films to the rest of the world as well. And we do that as an exchange to showcase these foreign interesting topics and films in Shanghai as well.
So tell us about, you know, queer films from Shanghai then, because, you know, we don't see that many of them here in Australia. When we talk about queer Shanghai cinema, what are some of the common preoccupations and themes that you see explored in queer Shanghai films?
It is true, because in general, LGBT films are not allowed. I wouldn't say it being publicly screened in cinemas in China.
Well, so perhaps let's unpack that question, Raymond, because that's a really significant point. Okay. That we kind of want to look at, you know, before we get to that other question. What do you mean when you say that films aren't really allowed? You know, are they being censored? Often we hear about scenes being cut from films that show in China. Can you talk us through that?
Of course, in general, every country or location, they have the film board or the censorship board. Mm. I mean, at least throughout the past 10 years or more, LGBT-themed films are not able to pass through the censorship board to be screened publicly in China. Even though when you see, like, big Oscar winners like Bohemian Rhapsody, yeah, or Green Book, I mean, although they are screened in China, but they are, the way they are marketed or the way the scenes are being edited off is totally different. Mm. So it really depends. But, you know, films like Moonlight or Brokeback Mountain, when you see that for the past few years, I mean, these specific themes that are even Call Me By Your Name, these are very targeted or specific LGBT themed films. They are not screened.
So, Raymond, is that the content you say? So, a film that had a kiss or something, you'd never see it. Where a film where maybe there wasn't intimate contact by the two mate, maybe two lovers on a screen, but you don't see. Is it that inherent, or it's enough that the story is about two key protagonists that are queer that would stop it being shown, or is it because it delves into maybe sex or any of that sort of stuff?
It's more of a general thing. So if you show an intimacy of same-sex couples, either it's just love or, you know, more into the sex scenes, these are often avoided, cut off. If it's not the key element of the film, and it really doesn't, well, it affects, but, I mean, in a whole film, it could be taken off, then it will be taken off.
Sure.
So that it goes on live to the public cinema here. But if these elements are the key or the main topic throughout the film, then probably this film wouldn't make it into public cinema.
Oh, I see. I get it now. So if it's just a simple sideline, subplot, and just a small scene, it'll get cut, it'll be edited and censored. But if the queer theme is the overarching element of the film, that's it. The film's not screened at all.
So tell us then about queer films that are being made in Shanghai, because that we've been talking about films that are imported. What about the films that are being made in Shanghai? What kind of themes do they deal with, and what kind of troubles do they face when it comes to screening?
I didn't mention that because of this reality of this ambiguous or uncertainty in terms of censorship. So filmmakers that are interested in making queer films in China, they are often not really well-funded or no investors because it's not going to make the big screen. So having said that, most of the production are short films. So, and more of the projects or productions are even student projects. So these are more, so the titles or the themes are pretty broad. There are a lot of documentaries showing off people coming out, talking to family, less about just narrative relationship stories, more on documentary, more on family, more on coming out and, you know, self-discovery, self-identity. I guess these are themes that are really, really important in China, because this is something that you don't really talk about as Asians, or at least Chinese. These are probably personal feelings or personal issues that you don't really express when you are, you know, you're out. So a lot of films are surrounding these themes when it comes to personal coming out, family, friends, rather than, you know, a lot of what you see, narrative fiction, a lot of creative themes that you see all around the world currently. So the Chinese themes are still exploring more on self and family.
So obviously, things aren't great when we talk about queer films in Shanghai, queer films in China, or perhaps more nicely put, certainly it sounds like there's a way to go in terms of improving representation. Do you think that better representation is tied to an improvement in the general kind of rights of LGBT people in Shanghai, China, or do you feel like there's a different answer to improving the representation that you have?
It can be simultaneous. Or it can be the film moving much forward than the, you know, the rights part. So I guess this is two things. It can be together. It can be moving on their direction. Because films, it's more influenced globally and regionally, the creativeness of all the films. And the characters are so, like, it's just part of the whole film. That you can see more and more films are globally are including LGBT characters, and so this will definitely bring positive impact on Chinese films as well, and queer filmmaking as well in China. Whereas that is the industry that's manageable by the industry, but whereas, you know, in terms of what you call equal rights, or when it comes to LGBT or same-sex marriage, that is more domestic, or that's more regulated in lawmaking, which is a different unit.
Yes.
So I guess, I mean, they will definitely have influence on each other, but we see in terms of the entertainment or the filmmaking business, that would be something more interesting and creative to move forward with.
Well, look, Raymond, it's been such a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for giving up your time to chat to us about the state of representation in Shanghai when it comes to queer cinema and, of course, the Shanghai Pride Film Festival. Where can people go? What's the best website for people to go if they want to find out more about your film festival?
We have it on Facebook and our website. So find out www.apressagepride.com or find us on Facebook, Shanghai Pride.
Thanks, Raymond.
Thank you.
That was Raymond Feng, the director of Shanghai Pride Film Festival, who I just cut off there mid-sentence.
But just imagine, I mean, do you know how excited...
Very bad.
Very bad.
Apologies, Raymond, if you're listening.
Huge apologies. But we know how we feel when MQFF rolls around every summer.
Yeah.
Right? Yes. We don't get it to see ourselves enough on screen in the nuanced ways that we want to. Yeah. And how excited we even get excited with the Sydney one and we want to go up to Sydney.
We have to go next year.
And we have to go. We're just going to go and do an outside broadcast there, putting that plug in. But imagine what it would be like for an audience that can't even see their films or themselves. And we talk about our representation on screen. So they get 11 days where, you know, Raymond, one of the organisers, can put together a package of 60 films. Imagine what that feeling is like. That would just be enormous to be seen it amongst your people. Just that feeling we get, amplify that.
I think what that also demonstrates.
Geez, we coded films all of our lives and now.
It must have been what it was like going to the Melbourne Queer Film Festival in its early years. You know, but that would be it'd be like the oasis in the desert.
Really would be. Great work, Raymond.
Speaking with Raymond demonstrates is that this interconnection between the law and cinema. You know, cinema is so, it's like the chicken and the egg, what comes first? Cinema is so fundamental to creating social change.
But they're under different classification restrictions than we've probably ever faced in our own cinema and telling our stories. And hence why they're making these accessible documentary products and probably shipping them overseas in order to get their stories made. But each person that makes one of those docos or short films, it's a training ground for their next story. Mm. And yes, while he was saying those stories are still central to coming out and maybe about family stories that we're used to having told, this is training ground for future filmmakers. So
I just want to know what happens to these filmmakers when they release these films. What happens to them from a political perspective?
No idea.
How is their life impacted? I mean, we should have asked Raymond that.
Well, coming up next, we are speaking with Chris Luskry and Jake Shannon. Chris is the producer and Jake the writer and director of Sammy the Salmon, which screened at Shanghai Pride Film Festival. So, Alan, you can ask them that right after this. You are listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are exploring the terrain of queer modern Asian cinema, so a very diverse landscape. Just before those messages, we were speaking with Raymond Feng. Raymond is the director and one of the organizers of a Shanghai Pride Film Festival. Fascinating to get his take on queer representation in Shanghai. We're only just scraping the surface here. But joining us now on the line is Chris Luskry and Jake Shannon. Chris is the producer and Jake the writer and director of Sammy the Salmon, a short film which recently screened as part of a package of Australian queer films showcased at Shanghai Pride Film Festival. So Chris and Jake, thank you so much for joining us on Outtakes.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Hi, Daniel.
Welcome to the program. Now tell us a little bit before we get into Shanghai Pride and the screening of the film there and all the places that the film has screened. Tell us a little bit about this short film.
I sort of came up with this idea a few years ago after a late night Wikipedia search for gay animals, and I found out
penguins, darling, penguins.
Yeah, the salmon. They're not only gay, but they can also be trans. And I thought, well, there's a film in that for sure.
So clearly that was the genesis of this idea. But, you know, our co-host Gina will know firsthand that putting together a short film, Gina's a producer as well, it's no easy feat.
No. I mean, it came from a sense of duty, really, because during the plebiscite a couple of years ago, I felt like there was all these really negative angles coming from all sorts of areas in the media, and we just sort of wanted to create something that was fun, uplifting and sweet, really, and to just sort of bring both sides together in a way.
So tell us about the kind of festival circuit that you've taken this film on.
Oh, I mean, it's blown us away, to be completely honest. It's premiered at the London BFI Film Festival, MQFF, Flickerfest, Rhode Island. Yeah, and actually this weekend it's going to be screening in Lawn.
So how did it, were you aware of the restrictions and the pressures that Shanghai Pride Film Festival kind of undertakes? So it's quite a big deal to have a film screen there. How did you feel about that?
Yeah, look, it was really quite amazing when we heard that we'd been selected. I'm a bit familiar with sort of contemporary queer politics within China, and particularly as it exists around film festivals. Mm-hmm. I'm a bit of a kind of rampant cinephile, so I do follow this thing. And, of course, I also followed the trail of independent filmmaking in China more generally, stemming mm-hmm. back to the 90s when there was a lot of early work being made on 16mm film and then subsequently on digital video with filmmakers like Jia Zhangke, who's now a contemporary, industry-sponsored filmmaker in China. But in terms of the particular politics within Shanghai about how the festival works, it's really interesting because in large part they have a sort of a sponsorship or a co-presentation deal with many of the consulates, and mm. and one of the ways that they get around the censorship issue is by being sponsored through the consulates. Mm. If they were to run the events as public or private screenings outside that context, they would face quite significant censorship issues, and this mm. is something that Raymond was interviewed about in Variety, I think, about a year
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, we were talking to him actually early, just before yourselves, and yeah, he was kind of talking about that work with the consulates, yeah.
What's really fascinating, actually, is, I mean, and one of the reasons we really wanted to sort of push the story about this was the degree to which, I mean, it struck us as being, like, really quite significant that there were a bunch of Australian films, including Black Lips, Bloom, and a film called This Perfect Day by Lydia Rui, who herself is a Chinese diaspora filmmaker, that was screening in this context. And one of the really interesting things about that was the fact that Shanghai Pride is so active in seeking to create an internationalist approach around queer cinema culture as a way, I guess, of very carefully but very passionately making inroads into broader queer representation and human rights within China.
Do you think there's a danger in importing queer cinema like that, or
I like the word exchange that Raymond used. Mm.
Look, I mean, it's
a lot more friendly really than importing.
Yes, Daniel. Yeah.
Sorry, Jake. We're talking over the top
air.
Of you.
Sorry, Jake.
No. Look, that's a really brilliant question to ask. And honestly, we're not fully qualified to really answer that. That would be much more of a question that would be better directly posed to people operating within sort of cultural institutions within China like Raymond. Mm. All we can say really from our part is that, you know, when it came for us, obviously this is great exposure for our film, so we weren't going to turn it down for that reason. But very much like what you just said, that exchange to us always seems more important than the internal issues of political machinations and deals and all that kind of stuff. I think to draw emphasis back again to the plebiscite, if you recall, there was really quite a lot of angst around calling the plebiscite in the first place. You know, there was
we recall right
about how complex, how much, you know, on the left, talking about how much trauma this was going to cause young queer teens, and on the right, you know, just giving queer culture too much of a showcase. Of course, it ended up being the middle ground politics that won in that instance, and I think that's a really good barometer. And I think we can say in retrospect, the plebiscite might not have been absolutely the right thing to do, but it was really the only thing to do, and in retrospect ended up being the right thing to do that pushed LGBTQ marriage in Australia. And I think if we can draw a parallel to what Shanghai Pride is doing, this kind of like what they'd call soft power politics is usually the way that long-term change is affected.
I think we're understanding where you're coming from that perspective, which is, you know, in a sense, build it and they will come. And in this sense here, they're sort of building this film festival. They're bringing content in, and
I think it's
and they're hoping that will, you know, change hearts and minds by exposing the broader community to
now,
that.
Now, the film, Sammy...
Incrementally, it's a process that takes many, many years, but, you know, when you look at education as a kind of, as a long, you know, a long development period with new generations being educated in a particular way, then I think you can
you can definitely see the lasting effects of that over time.
Your short film, though, Sammy the Salmon, so the one-liner that I can read out to our audience, unable to pluck up the courage to come out to his girlfriend, Spencer comes across Sammy, a talking salmon, who offers to get his love life back on track. For our Melbourne audience, where can they see it next?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be screening at the Lawn Film Festival, on this Saturday and Sunday. 4:30 p.m. on Saturday and 2 on Sunday.
Well, congratulations on the short film. For people wanting to find out more about the film, any recommended place to head online?
Yes, we're still doing the festival circuit, but hopefully in a while we might get some video on demand or something on Vimeo.
Do you have a Facebook page or something?
Oh, yeah, you can follow us at Sammy the Salmon Film on Facebook.
Awesome.
Well, Chris and Jake, thank you both so much for joining us on Outtakes this evening. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you so much, Daniel. That was really wonderful. Thanks.
Jake and Shannon there. Jake is the writer and director of Sammy the Salmon and Chris the producer of Sammy the Salmon, which screened at the Shanghai Pride Film Festival. Some controversial remarks about the plebiscite there, but we're moving past those and further deep into this exploration of the queer modern Asian cinematic landscape. Quite a mouthful there, and certainly we're only scraping the tip of the iceberg this evening because, you know, this is a cinematic landscape as diverse as Asia itself. But really great to get some insight through Jake and Chris about, you know, the experience of screening a film as part of this festival, and also Raymond earlier about, you know, why festivals like Shanghai Pride are so important. Mm. Coming up next, we are speaking with Benson Wu, no stranger to the program, is a good friend of the program, joined us last year to speak about the Taiwan Film Festival up in Sydney, and we'll be speaking with him again right after this about this year's Taiwan Film Festival and some of the great offerings that it has on show.
I can see what's happening.
I can't what?
And they don't have a clue.
Who's they?
They'll fall in love. And here's the bottom line. Our trio's down to two. The sweet caress of twilight.
Yeah.
There's magic everywhere.
It's everywhere.
And with all this romantic atmosphere, disasters in the air.
Can you feel the love tonight? The peace the perfect harmony with all its living things.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are exploring the world of modern queer Asian cinema. That was Can You Feel the Love Tonight from Disney's new Lion King remake, already grossed $531 million at the box office, and the star power there of Childish Gambino and Beyonce singing Can You Feel the Love Tonight.
Well, there's nothing like it's an oldie and it's a goodie. It's
a great song.
It's a great.
I just wish
they'd
take out those kind of comic interludes with Billy Eichner and Seth Rogen, and Billy Eichner, of course, taking to the media and saying he played Timon with a gay sensibility.
I don't buy it either. I think he's just playing into the fact that there's been some queer reading into the original film between those two characters, and so it didn't come out in the
But we are you know, taking our opportunity to listen to this soundtrack, which is a good soundtrack, even if the film has received tepid reviews. It's a great soundtrack, and that's a prime example example of why.
Well, I'm going to have to take your word on that, Daniel. I mean, if it looks, I'm not even sure if I can take your word on that because you've been listening to that other boring song over and over and over again. So I'm just going to have to take that with a big grain of salt. Hang on. Actually, you know, I'm going to...
Disregard it altogether.
Just completely, yeah, scrap it. I'm going to put pepper on it instead.
Well, we have been exploring the world of queer modern Asian cinema this evening. Now, we've been focusing predominantly on cinema from Shanghai over the course of the program, but we're turning our attention now to the modern queer cinematic landscape of Taipei, Taiwan, or Taiwan more broadly. And joining us on the phone is Benson Wu. Benson is the director of the Taiwan Film Festival, which runs up in Sydney from the 25th to the 28th of July. Benson, thank you so much for joining us on Outtakes.
Thanks for having me.
Yay.
Jenna, Daniel.
Hello.
On the show.
I can't believe, Benson, that it's already been a year since we last had you on the program.
Has it been a year?
It's been a year.
Oh my God, it just seems like yesterday.
I can't believe I can still run for a second year. I mean, I survive.
Now, we had a great chat last time you were on the program, Benson, about... You schooled Alan and I in the world of queer Taiwanese cinema and gave us a good précis of what that landscape looks like. For people who haven't gone back and listened to that podcast, which is available online, do tell us what queer Taiwanese cinema actually looks like.
Hot, sexy, Asian boy. it's no different than the Australian one, really. But if we talk about more like an old modern Asian, modern Taiwanese gay or LGBT cinema, I think this year and the last year, people really more focusing on the same-sex marriage story. More gay film or LGBT film that talk about parents' voice or different perspectives, how they were kind of affected when their kid coming out, rather than telling the story of a kid coming out as a gay or LGBT person. Yeah.
Like the film The Fish Tank is a short film you're playing at the festival is just such a unique, surprising perspective. I got to watch it and was just like, loved it.
I can't talk about it.
I don't want to spoil the surprise for anyone. But when, you know, if someone was to define it, I'd never define it as that. It's so beautiful and unique and it's such a gorgeous film.
Definitely. So I picked that because we were kind of partnering with Golden Horse Film Academy this year, and then I thought it would be good to really to have this kind of LGBT story, but from a different kind of perspective for telling the story. Because for me personally, I guess I hope I won't get banned by saying this, but I'm really sick of a story like the people teenager coming out and you know, two guys falling in love.
We get sick of that too. We want different stories. We feel you, but they're important. Exactly. But yeah, I want diversity.
But you just gloss over that, Benson, but it's actually pretty impressive that you're partnering with the Golden Horse Film Festival because that is the largest Mandarin film festival in Asia. Is that correct?
Well, that's what it's called now, yeah. But I think it is.
So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, well, I think we're pretty lucky because I went back last year, which was actually my first time attending the festival, and then I got to... be there when they had this kind of 10 years anniversary of the Golden Horse Film Academy screening, and then I saw this film. I just thought this is too powerful. I mean, I think I really want to show this to the audience here in Sydney. You know,
Now as well as the short films that you're screening, which Jean has already alluded to, you are also screening 10 feature films. Tell us about some of the feature films which you're screening at the festival that you think our audiences will be particularly interested in.
So especially I'm screening one of the retrospectives called River. So it's directed by award-winning director Cai Ming-liang. He's gay. And then The River is really good because it's quite like a slow cinema, but then it's about... I don't want to spill the story. It's about
Don't ruin it.
It's about the father and son are gay, but they can't coming out to their family member, and then they're having this kind of difficulty identifying themselves as gay as well. So Cai Ming-liang, what he did was actually present this kind of isolation, this kind of loneliness, and this kind of difficulty. If you don't admit who you are, then this not only damage yourself or hurt yourself, but you also hurt the whole family as well. So it's really powerful. I think, and it's also quite a different representation and different perspective on how to take on this kind of subject. Because it was originally made in 1997, and then I think back then when it was made, a lot of gay community, especially from Taiwan, was kind of against this film because they felt this kind of the film actually portrayed the bad side of the dark side of the gay community, which they don't want to be aligned with. But I think it's worth seeing because it's really powerful.
And a really interesting thumbprint as well to history.
Yeah, definitely. And because I don't know if you guys have been to earlier this year with the Art Gallery in Southwell, we screened one of the even older retrospectives called The End of the Track. So that film was about, I think it was back in 1960 or 1950, and it was about how these two guys fall in love, but then it was fully banned.
Of course, naturally. Fascinating.
So just kind of refer back to your Shanghai topic earlier.
But then again, while on this one hand you have these kind of historical thumbprints, you're also screening highly contemporary pieces. Is it a Nina Wu film about the Me Too movement?
Yeah, so it was written by Kai Si Wu, she was also starring as a Nina Wu in the film. She was inspired by the Me Too movement, so she wrote the story, and then she don't want to give away too much as well. She is kind of a lesbian character in the film. But the film, I think you can look at it as a feminist representation of the film, but more of a storytelling that uncovered the real female identity living in this kind of film industry in Asia, or especially in Taiwan. And that kind of pressure, to be honest, still exists. It's quite a realistic story. Yeah. And I think it's screening at the Melbourne International Film Festival next week as well.
Awesome. Well, we've been discussing, you know, the issues involved with kind of LGBT rights and the law in cinema more broadly as they kind of crop up in different Asian countries this evening. Yeah. I'd love to know, from your perspective in Taiwan, do you think that there is a relationship between what is clearly a much more liberal queer cinema scene and the fact that Taiwan has, you know, relatively progressive LGBT rights for an Asian country? Yeah.
I would say yes and no in a way, because if you look at back to last year, I think when they passed the same-sex marriage, before that, the referendum vote actually didn't get passed. There was a massive gap between people who voted no, people who voted yes. And so even though I think like the media, how people kind of portray Taipei is very LGBT open-minded and stuff like that, but if you go into a little bit deeper, if you know the local or slightly more elderly people, they are not. And that kind of pressure, that kind of closet kind of feeling still exists in Taiwan. And so I wouldn't say that this kind of LGBT cinema is really quite open-minded in Taiwan just yet. Although the last year's biggest winner film, Dear X, was really good.
Well, naturally, a long way to go, but so great nonetheless to get these little tastes of Taiwanese cinema that you bring us for 2 years in a row now. We just need to arrange for you to screen some of the films here in Melbourne.
I don't know. Well, you know we're going to be there next week or the week after, so that's just good. I would love to expand the festival to Melbourne probably next year.
Yay. Fantastic. There's a plan. For people wanting to find out more about the festival, Benson, what's the website?
It's pretty easy. www.taiwanfilmfestival.org.au. You can book the ticket directly from our website, or you can follow us on Facebook and all the other social media channels.
Great to speak to you again, Benson. Thank you so much for joining us on Outtakes.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Bye.
That was Benson Wu, the director of the Taiwan Film Festival, which is running in its second year up in Sydney. So do head online.
So we should just go to Sydney for a few outside broadcasts.
Why are we missing out?
Yeah, I know. No. We should just go up there.
We are,
because there are actually some really good films that are playing at this festival. And the Fish Tank short film, bloody brilliant.
Sorry. Well, you know, we've only just scraped the surface of the topic that we set out to tackle this evening, which is modern queer Asian cinema. We were never really going to get very into what
Definitely
is
not.
A hugely expansive topic. But, you know, I do feel like we've learned a little bit about representation, certainly in Shanghai and Taipei. Mm. So thank you to all of the guests who joined us on tonight's program.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.